It's time we all faced the fact that expert management is never well served by allowing children to grow up or to grow whole. Its tutelage is only justified intellectually by the academic disciplines of psychology and sociology and anthropology and evolutionary biology, even military science, each contending in its own way that growing up is impossible for most of us. All of these disciplines grew from corporate or government underwriting. Regardless of how many famous leftists are associated with these particular movements, they were all paid for by corporations or government. Why? The philosophical momentum of managerialism in the West was, in my opinion, only balked by the theology of Christianity, which expressly forbids the faithful to duck personal responsibility, and it establishes the road to salvation as a lonely personal road. You can get some assistance from being part of a congregation, but when you stand face to face with your Maker, according to this theology, there are no excuses. You are fully responsible. Thus, Western religious thinking itself became a prime target of schooling, as from a pedagogical perspective, it was implacably contrarian, so it had to be systematically destroyed. Somewhat over 100 years ago, higher academic voices in America set up a litany which communicated that, however elliptical, we would remain children forever, always in need of supervision and regulation. The identical message that Prussians had heard a century and more before. One recent piece of evidence that our leaders listened to the voices came to me from a press conference held by Vice President Gore's wife just a couple days before the election of 2000. In that press conference, Tipper Gore declared that 55% of the American people are mentally disturbed and in need of therapy. But Mrs. Gore isn't the only one saying that. She's one of a host of commentators that urge daily that we be kept under closer and closer surveillance for our own good, of course. When speaking to this question of general irresponsibility, observe how convenient and useful it is if classrooms are workshops of rudeness, rowdiness, and danger. Far from being something to avoid, it's something to welcome, because how better can you instruct the onrushing generations that they can't trust one another and instruct their parents not to stand in the way of official ministration, because look how dangerous these children are. At the end of the 20th century, approximately 100,000 American school children were being barcoded in an experiment to track their passages and see to it that each boy and girl is always where someone else thinks they belong. Everything in its place, a place for everything. The profound change in the American bargain with its young, the change that dumbing them down and demoralizing them brought about, was not the result of popular demand, nor was it caused by prominent socialists like John Dewey, who are often blamed. The transformation was an undertaking, plain and simple, of industrial titans like Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, Vincent Astor, Commodore Vanderbilt, John D. Rockefeller, Henry Ford, and a few others. And if you find your skepticism rising at that statement, I suggest you ask the librarian to secure for you the two American congressional investigations of what's behind schooling. One was made in 1915. It's the Walsh Committee report. The other one in 1953 is a senator from Tennessee. Sorry, the name eludes me. But both of these congressional reports, which are quite extensive, came to the same conclusion, that schooling is under the direction of the private corporate foundations of this handful of men I just measured, and long after their death, that oversight continues. Just watch, if you're in the education school, how often you see a reference to one or another of the Carnegie endowments, the Ford endowments, or the Rockefeller endowments. Isn't that wonderfully generous of them? But remember, these policy people were only interested in outcomes. They left the details to underlings like Henry Kissinger or Zbigniew Brzezinski. And what is that work? One way to understand it is to see it as a systematic recreation of the class-based, expert-driven, managerial society of Anglican Britain, only this time based in supposedly objective scientific principles. You know, all those bell curves that justify locking all those children away for their own good. But why would an economic leadership committed to Adam Smith's capitalistic principles veer in this decidedly socialistic direction? Fortunately, these men talk about it in their own essays, memoirs, letters, and occasional writings. Carnegie and Rockefeller, for instance, both despised competition because they thought it was irrational. As purely rational thinkers, they worked with might and main to stamp it out and to replace it with a planetary form of government which would resemble the British Empire and its Anglican corporate theology, only it would be better, because more efficient.